Good morning, and welcome to the J. M. Smucker Company's Fiscal 2018 Fourth Quarter Earnings Conference Call. This conference is being recorded, and all participants are in a listen-only mode. At the request of the company, we will open the conference up for questions and answers after the prepared remarks. Please limit yourself to two questions during the Q&A session and re-queue if you have additional questions. I'll now turn the conference over to Aaron Broholm, Vice President, Investor Relations. Please go ahead, sir.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us on our Fiscal 2018 Fourth Quarter Earnings Conference Call. Mark Smucker, President and CEO, and Mark Belgya, Vice Chair and CFO, will provide our prepared comments. Also participating in the Q&A are Joe Stanziano, Senior Vice President and General Manager, Coffee; Tina Floyd, Senior Vice President and General Manager, Consumer Foods; Barry Dunaway, President, Pet Food and Pet Snacks; and Dave Lemon, President, Canada, International, and U.S. Away From Home. As previously announced, Dave will be assuming the role of President, Pet Food and Pet Snacks later this month, in advance of Barry's retirement from the company in July. During today's call, we will make forward-looking statements that reflect the company's current expectations about future plans and performance. These statements rely on assumptions and estimates, and actual results may differ materially due to risks and uncertainties. I encourage you to read the full disclosure concerning forward-looking statements in this morning's press release, which is located on our corporate website at jmsmucker.com. Additionally, please note the company uses non-GAAP results to evaluate performance internally, as detailed in the press release. We have posted to our website a supplementary slide deck summarizing the quarterly results, our fiscal 2019 outlook, and information about recent new product launches. The slides can be accessed through the link to the webcast of this call and will be archived on our website along with a replay of this call. If you have additional questions after today's call, please contact me. I will now turn the call over to Mark Smucker.
Thank you, Aaron. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us. This morning, I'll begin by discussing our fourth quarter results and then transition to an update on the progress we've made over the past year on our strategic roadmap, which will segue into Mark Belgya's discussion of our fiscal 2019 outlook. We established our strategic roadmap to define a clear path to delivering on our three key financial priorities: growing the top line, achieving significant cost savings, and delivering earnings per share growth in line with our stated long-term objective. As we reported in our earnings release this morning, both industry-wide factors and certain discrete events impacted progress in delivering against these financial priorities in the fourth quarter. While performance under-delivered for the quarter, we remain steadfast that the actions we are taking position us to deliver against each of these priorities and will create long-term shareholder value that outpaces our peers. In fact, we are seeing improved trends in the first quarter. Fourth quarter net sales and adjusted earnings per share were below our projections, primarily driven by results in the coffee and pet businesses due to a few factors. First, trade spend in the quarter was higher than planned, most notably for Folgers roast and ground coffee in response to competitive activity. While elevated trade support will continue as a lever to manage price, we are making progress toward aligning our coffee portfolio with the industry by increasing our presence in both premium and one-cup coffee. To this point, sales for both Dunkin' Donuts and Cafe Bustelo grew 11% this year as the brands crossed the $550 million and $150 million thresholds, respectively, in annual net sales. Second, initial customer demand for our 1850 and Dunkin' Donuts canister launches was even stronger than expected. As a result, we incurred greater than forecasted operating and introductory costs in response to a broader than anticipated launch. While these incremental costs were incurred in the fourth quarter, the majority of initial customer shipments are occurring in this quarter, the first quarter of fiscal 2019. Additional factors that impacted the quarter that were not in our most recent guidance included pet food recall charges and financing costs associated with the Ainsworth acquisition. Also, freight expense, although anticipated to be higher, exceeded our projections by approximately $5 million. However, despite these headwinds, we delivered stronger than anticipated free cash flow for the quarter and the full year. While not reflected in the fourth quarter financial performance, the recent actions we've taken towards transforming our business are indicative of a new pace of change and sense of urgency within our company. They validate that we are focusing on those areas where we can win, realigning our portfolio to higher growth areas and on-trend categories. Consider the following recent highlights. We appointed new leadership in all our strategic business areas. We created centers of excellence to ensure a relentless focus on consumer needs and improving our speed to market. We brought to market two of our most important innovations in recent years, 1850 Premium Coffee and Jif Power Ups Snacks. We bolstered our premium pet food offerings with the acquisition of Ainsworth, which adds the fast-growing Rachael Ray Nutrish brand to the right segment of our portfolio. We moved forward aggressively with plans to explore a divestiture of a non-strategic asset, our U.S. baking business. We recently communicated with employees our intention to consolidate our West Coast pet food offices into our Orrville corporate location to manage our largest business seamlessly with our centers of excellence. We enhanced our partnership with Keurig to be more competitive in the market and open the door to expanded distribution. And finally, we launched RightSpend, our zero-based budgeting program, at the beginning of fiscal 2019. These actions are significant and directly aligned with our consumer-led strategy to be a food and beverage leader focused on high-growth on-trend categories. These actions are also proof that we are moving faster in order to deliver growth and strengthen our financial performance. Further, they deliver on the four pillars of our strategic roadmap: innovation, investment, cost savings, and acquisitions. Let me briefly touch on each area. I'll start with innovation, where products introduced in the past 3 years delivered nearly $500 million or 7% of fiscal 2018 net sales. As we begin 2019, initial reads on the introduction of our 1850 premium coffee brand are strong. The product, which was developed through our new approach to innovation, tested well with not only traditional Folgers drinkers, but also a younger generation of consumers who prefer bolder coffee blends. The initial 1850 launch spans 17 SKUs, and retailer interest has been strong, with customer acceptance rates and the number of shelf facings exceeding our expectations. To drive consumer awareness, we developed a comprehensive PR and marketing program, which is just getting underway. We are very encouraged with the reaction to the launch, and initial product shipments will continue throughout the first quarter. We expect 1850 to be a growth platform for years to come. We are similarly optimistic about Jif Power Ups, our new line of snack bars and peanut butter clusters that began shipping in May. This on-trend product extends the power of the Jif brand into the fast-growing snacking category while tapping continued interest in protein-based snacks. Like 1850, we are supporting the launch of Jif Power Ups with significant retailer and consumer investment, including an integrated PR and marketing campaign with a celebrity endorsement. We view these investments as essential to success for a launch of this magnitude. In pet, recent product introductions include Pupperoni Jerky Bites and new varieties of Milo's Kitchen Premium Dog Treats. With real meat as the number one ingredient, these items expand our presence in the natural meat snacks category, which has grown 15% over the past 52 weeks. Late this fiscal year, we look forward to new launches that will expand the reach of our iconic Milk-Bone brand into key pet snack segments. All of these innovations underscore our commitment to adapting to market trends. We recognize that these efforts will be essential to compete in our dynamic industry. Turning to the second pillar of the roadmap, which is investments, momentum for the Smucker's Uncrustables brand remains strong, with company-wide sales up 15% this year, marking the fourth consecutive year of double-digit growth. In 2018, the brand surpassed the $250 million level in annual net sales, as we produced and sold more than 500 million sandwiches over the course of the year. With construction of our new facility in Longmont, Colorado, on track for completion in fiscal 2020, this will provide capacity to further accelerate growth as we expect to double net sales for Uncrustables to more than $500 million over the next 5 years. We are now more than a year into the grocery and mass channel rollout of our Nature's Recipe premium dog food brand, and we continue to see a positive response and good momentum. Net sales for the brand were up 20% in the fourth quarter, even while lapping the prior year launch, and up 33% on a full year basis. In addition, consumer takeaway for our mainstream dog food brands continues to significantly outperform the overall dry dog food category. This growth occurred despite increased competitive activity in the mass premium space. We expect Nature's Recipe will serve as a strong complement to the newly acquired Nutrish brand, which I will discuss in a moment. We are also a year into the launch of the Jif brand in Canada, and the brand has quickly gained share in the peanut butter market. This contributed to company-wide sales for Jif growing 3% for the year. Lastly, on the topic of investments, e-commerce remains a significant area of strategic focus. While still a small base, with just over 2% of 2018 U.S. retail sales coming from the e-commerce channel, sales were up 71% this year, with pet food brands up 64% and coffee sales in the channel more than doubling. We continue to expect 5% of our net sales will come from the pure play e-commerce channel by fiscal 2020, and an even greater percentage when factoring in click and collect models. As you can see, in addition to supporting innovation, we will also increase investment in several of our core brands. These investments are essential to support growth and the long-term health of our brands. The third pillar of our strategic roadmap is generating cost savings to provide the fuel for investments in top-line growth and margin protection and expansion. In 2018, we realized our $200 million pet food synergy target while continuing to make progress on our other cost savings programs. This included our new K-Cup agreement, which has led to improved economics, increased distribution, and additional SKUs. As a result, net sales for our U.S. K-Cup portfolio grew 11% for the year, with Dunkin' Donuts and Cafe Bustelo K-Cups both up over 20%. Due to the improved profitability of K-Cups, margins are now consistent across all of our coffee segments, which is critical given our strategic focus on growing our premium and one-cup segments. For fiscal 2019, we have implemented right spend to strengthen cost discipline throughout the organization and deliver a portion of the overall fiscal 2019 savings. By the end of the fiscal year, we will also relocate our pet food offices in both San Francisco and Burbank to our corporate offices in Orrville, furthering collaboration and enhanced agility while improving cost efficiency. The final pillar of our strategic roadmap is acquisitions. Last month, we completed the Ainsworth transaction and welcomed a very talented team to the Smucker family. We are extremely excited to add Rachael Ray Nutrish, a high-growth premium brand that has been a catalyst in transforming the dog food category and in grocery and mass channels. With distribution expansion opportunities and significant growth prospects in cat food and pet snacks, the addition of Nutrish will accelerate growth in our pet business. While the deal closed less than a month ago, we are already progressing toward a seamless integration of people, processes, and systems into our pet business by the end of the fiscal year. While growth through acquisitions plays a key role in our strategy, we have also demonstrated a willingness to divest businesses that are no longer consistent with our strategic focus and direction. Given our focus on growing our coffee, pet, and snack food businesses, in April of this year, we announced our intent to explore a divestiture of our U.S. baking brands and business. We are moving forward in the process and anticipate providing future updates in the coming months. Fiscal 2019 will be a year of continued transformation and growth. As I mentioned, stepped-up investments in our brands and innovation are imperative to adapting to market trends. Although for 2019, a significant portion is in support of our innovation launches, we expect to sustain these increased investments in consumer marketing in future years. Through cost savings programs and the benefit of U.S. tax reform, we have the resources to compete responsibly while at the same time increase fiscal 2019 adjusted earnings per share by 6 to 9%. In wrapping up, here are a few thoughts we hope you took away from my comments. While we are not satisfied with our fourth quarter performance, we are positioned for long-term success in some of the best food categories, coffee, pet food, peanut butter, snacking. We have a strong mix of leading iconic brands and emerging on-trend brands, as evidenced by full year 2018 sales growth for Smucker's, Jif, Milk-Bone, Dunkin' Donuts, Cafe Bustelo, Smucker's Uncrustables, and Nature's Recipe, which underscores our ability to react to and capitalize on changing consumer needs. We are taking and will continue to evaluate appropriate actions to align our portfolio to growth, whether through innovation, acquisitions, divestitures, or improving capabilities and execution in key areas. And finally, our cost savings initiatives, along with benefits of income tax reform, allow us to mitigate headwinds in certain parts of our businesses and provide fuel to invest in our brands and our resources. Let me close my comments by thanking all of our employees for their efforts this past year and their continued dedication as we move forward. We are confident we have the right team in place to deliver long-term growth and shareholder value. we recognize that there is still more work to do as part of our company's transformation. We also know that we can't stand still, and we'll continue to adapt to changes in our industry and consumer preferences. We look forward to providing future updates at an Investor Day in New York City on October 9th, as our talented leadership team will share more details on the strategic roadmap for their respective businesses. I will now turn the call over to Mark.
Thank you, Mark. Good morning, everyone. I will start with an overview of fourth quarter results and 2018 cash flow performance, and then shift to providing additional color on our outlook for fiscal 2019. GAAP earnings per share was $1.64 in the quarter compared to 96 cents in the prior year. The increase primarily reflected a favorable change in unallocated derivative gains and losses in the current year, along with the prior year including a 34 cent impairment charge. Excluding these items and reflecting other non-GAAP adjustments summarized in this morning's press release, fourth quarter adjusted earnings per share was $1.93 compared to $1.80 in 2017, an increase of 7%. Included in this quarter's adjusted EPS were combined costs of approximately $15 million, or 10 cents per share, associated with pet product recalls and acquisition financing, which were not reflected in our most recent guidance. Net sales were flat compared to the prior year, as higher net price realization, contributing 1 percentage point to net sales growth, was offset by lower volume mix. Adjusted gross profit increased $6 million, or 1%, as the net benefit of higher pricing and lower costs more than offset the profit impact of lower volume mix. Adjusted gross margin was 37.9% in the fourth quarter, up 40 basis points compared to the prior year. However, this was below our projection due to less net price realization than anticipated and higher freight costs. While costs for the 1850 and Dunkin' Donuts canister launches also exceeded our previous forecast, initial volume expectations have increased. SD&A decreased $7 million in the fourth quarter, or 2% compared to 2017, driven by lower corporate administrative expenses, primarily reflecting a reduction in incentive compensation costs and ongoing budget management. This was partially offset by a charge related to pet food product recalls. For the year, corporate administrative expenses decreased $30 million, or 9%. Factoring in all of this, adjusted operating income increased $10 million, or 3% compared to the prior year, which included a $4 million gain on divestiture. Adjusted operating margin increased 60 basis points to 19.6%. Below operating income, interest expense increased primarily due to non-capitalized financing costs associated with the Ainsworth acquisition. The higher interest expense and a $3 million unfavorable change in other income were more than offset by a lower tax rate, which decreased from 31.8% last year to 29.6% this quarter. Lastly, the current quarter results benefited from a 1% reduction in weighted average shares outstanding, reflecting shares repurchased in the fourth quarter of fiscal 2017. Let me turn to the segment-specific results, beginning with coffee. Net sales were flat to the prior year, as a 4% increase from volume mix, reflecting gains across all our coffee brands, was offset by lower net price realization. Sales for the Dunkin' Donuts brand increased 8% on strong K-Cup performance. An increase in promotional spending needed to improve competitive positioning for Folgers Roast and Ground Coffee drove a 2% net sales decline for that brand. Cafe Bustelo also declined 2% in the quarter, primarily due to the timing of shipments to a large club customer. Coffee segment profit increased 4% due to favorable volume mix and lower input costs, which more than offset the reduction in price realization and a significant increase in marketing expense of nearly 20% for the quarter. Segment profit margin of 30.7% represented a 110 basis point increase over the prior year, but was below our expectations for the fourth quarter due to the higher than planned levels of trade spend and product launch cost. For 2019, we project full year coffee segment profit growth in the mid single digits, which will be heavily weighted toward the first half of the fiscal year. This will be driven by the full year benefit of lower green coffee costs and our revised K-Cup contract. These cost savings will be partially offset by an estimated $30 million investment to support our 1850 launch and an increase in marketing support behind Dunkin' Donuts and Cafe Bustelo. In consumer foods, net sales were down 2% compared to the prior year due to declines in the oils and baking categories. Excluding these two categories, net sales were up 1%. An overall volume mix decline of 8% in the segment reflected the impact of higher pricing in several categories, with net price realization up 6%. Sales for the Smucker's brand were up 9%, reflecting growth in both Uncrustables, frozen sandwiches, and fruit spreads. For the Jif brand, while consumer takeaway was up in the latest 12-week period, net sales declined 3% due to the timing of peanut butter shipments and a strong prior year comp. Sales for the Crisco and Pillsbury brands also declined in the quarter. As we move into fiscal 2019, we have taken strategic actions to improve the everyday price points for Crisco. Consumer food segment profit increased 5% compared to the prior year, despite the profit impact associated with the lower volume mix and higher freight costs. Profit growth continues to reflect successful execution of our pricing strategies. For 2019, we project full-year consumer food segment profit to be flat to down slightly prior to any impact of potential divestiture of our baking business. This reflects an estimated $20 million investment to support Jif Power Ups launch and an incremental $7 million of costs associated with our Longmont facility. Turning to the pet food segment, net sales were flat compared to the prior year as slight increase in net price realization was offset by lower volume mix. Sales for our mainstream dog food brands were flat as a 20% growth for Nature's Recipe and 6% growth for Kibbles and Bits were offset by declines for Gravy Train due to the product recall and planned SKU rationalization. Cat food sales increased 3% driven by growth for the Nine Lives brand, while pet snacks decreased 1%. Lastly, within premium pet food, sales for the Natural Balance brand decreased 5%, primarily due to softness in the pet specialty channel. Pet food segment profit decreased 13% compared to the prior year. Nearly one half of this decline was attributable to the product recall cost of the quarter. In addition, higher commodity and freight costs were not fully offset by the higher price realization. While we expect this price-to-cost relationship to continue in fiscal 2019, overall pet food segment profit is expected to increase approximately 20% compared to the prior year, reflecting the addition of Ainsworth. Lastly, in the international and away-from-home segment, net sales increased 2% compared to the prior year, driven by foreign currency exchange. Segment profit also increased 2%, despite the prior year including a $4 million gain on the sale of our minority interest in SeaMild. Excluding this item, segment profit increased 11% with lower input costs, decrease in marketing expense, and foreign currency exchange all contributing. Let me now turn to an overview of cash and debt. Fourth quarter free cash flow was $203 million, bringing the full year total to $896 million, a 3% increase compared to the prior year. This surpassed our fiscal 2018 updated guidance of $825 million, as lower than projected working capital more than offset capital expenditures, which came in at $322 million. We ended the year with debt of $4.8 billion. Based on 2018's EBITDA of $1.6 billion, our leverage ratio stood at 3 times as of April 30th. On May 14th, we drew $1.5 billion on a new term loan and issued $400 million of commercial paper to fund the closing of the Ainsworth transaction. This increased our leverage to approximately 4 times. The company has no required debt maturities coming due this fiscal year, and we expect to focus on reducing leverage closer to 3 times over the next couple of years. Let me now provide additional color on our outlook for fiscal 2019. This guidance includes projected contributions from the recently acquired Ainsworth business, but excludes any impact from a potential divestiture of our U.S. baking business. Big picture, we expect net sales to increase approximately 13% to $8.3 billion, driven by the addition of the Ainsworth business. Excluding Ainsworth, sales are expected to be up 2%, reflecting the launch of 1850 and Jif Power-Ups. There is a 1% negative impact due to planned SKU rationalizations, most notably in our pet segment. From an earnings perspective, we expect to deliver EPS growth of 6 to 9% as the benefits of continued cost savings and incremental tax reform more than offset a significant increase in brand support and cost inflation. Overall, commodity costs are projected to be higher, with lower coffee costs expected to be offset by increases across a number of our key commodities and other raw materials, including peanuts, protein, and packaging. The pet segment will be most impacted, with consumer foods also facing a net increase in cost. In addition, the freight headwind that impacted us the last 6 months of fiscal 2018 is expected to continue into this year. SD&A expenses are expected to increase over 20% compared to the prior year, mostly attributable to the addition of Ainsworth. Excluding the acquisition, SD&A will be up mid to high single digits, reflecting a substantial increase in marketing, most notably approximately $50 million in support of 1850 and Shift Power-Up launches, and also costs associated with the construction of our Uncrustables facility in Colorado. With 6 incremental months of improved K-Cup manufacturing cost and additional cost reduction initiatives, we project an incremental $80 million will be realized in fiscal 2019 related to our $250 million cost management program. Along with the $100 million we achieved in 2018, this would bring our cumulative total to $180 million in annual cost savings, with the remaining expected to be realized in 2020. Below operating income, we expect interest expense of approximately $220 million, with the year-over-year increase reflecting borrowings to finance the Ainsworth acquisition and an overall higher interest rate environment. We now project an effective tax rate of approximately 24.5%. This compares to our initial 2019 guidance of 23%, primarily reflecting higher state income taxes. Lastly, our guidance reflects weighted average share count of 113.6 million based on current shares outstanding. As a result of all these factors, we're projecting adjusted EPS to be in the range of $8.40 to $8.65. We project free cash flow will be approximately $800 to $850 million, with CapEx expected to total somewhere between $350 million and $370 million, including $100 million related to the Uncrustables production facility. Other key assumptions affecting cash flow include depreciation and amortization expenses of approximately $220 and $250 million respectively, including an estimate for Ainsworth amortizable intangible assets, share-based compensation expense of $20 million, and lastly, one-time cost of $60 million, which are mostly cash-related, including approximately $30 million of costs associated with the Ainsworth acquisition and the remainder primarily associated with our organization optimization, including the closure of certain offices. As you can see, the actions we are taking to transform our company are enabling us to deliver against our financial priorities of growing the top line, achieving significant cost savings, and delivering earnings per share growth in line with our stated long-term objectives. We're encouraged by the progress being made on our strategic roadmap, but recognize there is still much to be done, and we're proceeding with a sense of urgency to deliver long-term growth and enhance shareholder value. We thank you for your time, and we'll now open the call up to your questions. Operator, if you'd please queue up the first question.
Thank you. The question and answer session will begin at this time. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up the handset before pressing any numbers. Should you have a question, please press star then one on your touch-tone telephone. If you wish to withdraw your question, please press the pound key. For operator assistance, please press star zero. As a reminder, please limit yourself to two questions during the Q&A session. Should you have additional questions, you may re-queue and the company will take questions as time allows. Please stand by for the first question. Our first question comes from Andrew Lazar with Barclays. Your line is now open.
Good morning, everybody.
Morning, Andrew.
Hi. So two quick things. One would be, just first, Mark, you mentioned your expectation for EPS growth in fiscal 19, obviously given cost saves and the tax benefit and some deal accretion. Given all of the activity you've got this year around innovation and some of the big platforms that you're bringing to market, and I know you're spending more against them as you've talked about, but I guess is this a year where you feel as though that's enough, or do you feel limited at all, I guess, by the desire to show EPS growth in a year where maybe even, more spending behind some of these platforms is better? So I guess I'm trying to get a sense of, I guess, do you feel like you've got enough behind these innovations, or are you limiting yourself, you know, because of the desire to show, obviously, EPS growth? That'd be the first one.
Andrew, I'll start. This is Mark Belgia, and then actually Mark Smucker will finish me up. Good morning. So great question, and we appreciate the question. Obviously, there is a lot going on, and I think one of the points that we have made and will continue to make throughout the course of the morning and into the future is that we are very excited about these two particular innovation launches. They're two of the biggest that we've had in the company's history. We've learned over the years that if you don't support launches of this size, they will not maximize their potential. So, and speaking on behalf of the team here, I think we feel comfortable that the dollars we have behind those launches are adequate to achieve success in year one. And again, to reinforce that this is platform growth, so there'll be more to come behind these particular launches in coming years. At the same time, we're also comfortable that brands like our growth brands like Dunkin', Uncrustables, Bustelo, that we've also stepped up the spend behind those appropriately. And so feel that what is amounting to about an $80 to $85 million total marketing increase over last year on the business excluding Ainsworth is sufficient. We are fortunate to be a beneficiary of U.S. tax reform and the good work that our teams have done around cost savings that will allow us to do that. So there's a lot of headwinds out there, a lot of uncertainties, but we feel that we're adequately investing, and our guidance range is capturing sort of all our thoughts around where costs are headed, where pricing may be headed, where tariffs might be headed, and then the like.
Got it. Okay, thanks for that.
Yeah.
And then just, oh, yeah, do you want to?
Yeah, Andrew, if I could. This
sure.
is Mark Smucker. Just, a couple things. I think I repeated myself a lot in the script, but wanted to just two key points. The first is really want you guys to take away from the discussion today that we've made a lot of progress in terms of realigning our portfolio to the growth segments. As you know, we've got more work to do, and at the end of the day, we are executing our strategy. But as it relates specifically to marketing, if you look at our marketing investment in our in consumer marketing over the last decade or so, you will see that we have actually eroded our marketing spend to the tune of about $80 million, and that is simply not acceptable. And so as a result of that erosion, and yes, some of it did go into trade, but as a result of that erosion, we have made choices in particular years about supporting core brands versus innovation, and we've got to ensure that we are supporting our brands for the long term, or we will watch the health of those brands deteriorate. And so if you think about the launch of Nature's Recipe a year and a half ago, we spent significantly behind that launch. Similarly with these two innovations, And with any innovation, we've got to commit to the support. And then over time, that significant investment would shift to other innovations, and we would see, the second or third year after a launch, we would see support come down for those launches to some maintenance level, and that would continue to support. But we've got to make sure that if you look at our marketing, as a percent of net sales, we need to be more in line with the rest of the industry in terms of what we're supporting, both our new products or new brands as well as our core business. So that really is a key message going forward.
Great. I'll leave it there. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Chris Groh with Stifel. Your line is now open.
Chris?
If your line's muted, can you please unmute?
How about now?
Yeah, we hear you.
Okay, sorry, thank you. I just wanted to ask, in relation to your guidance you gave it, and we talked about fiscal 19 being a year in which you should be able to grow above your long-term growth algorithm. With all the cost savings coming through, with the tax savings coming through, what is it that ultimately led you to a growth rate more in line with, if you will, roughly in line with your long-term range? Is it the marketing? Is it the trade promotion? You clearly contemplated some of these incremental launches. Just curious what could have led to a little weaker outlook for fiscal 19 EPS.
Well, yeah, Chris, this is Mark Belgia. Let me just try to frame this in for those of you on the phone. So if you kind of work off of where you guys are at, the street's at generally, I think the first thing is we're obviously starting at a lower base. But beyond that, as I noted, we're taking our tax rate down about a point and a half from original, most of that driven by state taxes. The Ainsworth acquisition and the footprint we have is driving a little bit of that. So that's about 15 cents of earnings. And then if you flip back to some of the commentary from CAGNY, I think that we had called out a marketing increase somewhere in the mid-teens, which would probably have equated to around a mid-$65 million number. As I just said, we're more in the $85 million. So you know, that's another $20 million, if you would. Our savings, our cost programs are a little shy. We thought we'd come in closer to $100 million. We're still going to go after it, but for now our guidance was reflecting around $80 million, so there's another $20 million. Clearly, we've got some additional costs in our construction of our Longmont facility. As I mentioned, that's about $7 million. And then we also have some incremental freight costs facing us here, particularly in the first half of the year. So those four or five items are key drivers that take us down sort of where, you know, where the street sits down to that the range that we've just discussed.
Okay. And just thank you for that, Mark. Just one other follow-up. Is Ainsworth is accretive in fiscal 19? Have you said how much accretion you expect from that transaction?
Yeah, Chris, what we said is when we announced the transaction, we said about 25 cents accretive net of interest and so forth, and basically we're right on that target.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Our next question comes from David Driscoll with Citi. Your line is now open.
Hi, guys. Good morning.
Hi, David.
Good morning.
So, Mark Smucker. This question is for you. It's a little bit of a tough one, but your stock is indicated down quite substantially, so I'm going to be pretty straightforward. In the release, you say you're confident in delivering on the objectives, but you do have a big fourth quarter miss, and guidance is well off versus the company's CAGNY comments, which were just at the end of February, and this 8% EPS growth. You made, I think, some very compelling comments about what you've done to reshape the portfolio. But I honestly think the debate today is whether Smucker's and the other CPG companies have the ability to take pricing to offset inflation, and the fourth quarter results really call this into question. So kind of really directly, Mark, and really you're speaking to all these investors now, is given the way the stock is going to act, why are you confident, and can Smucker's take the necessary price actions?
So thanks for the question, David. So first of all, you know, the first thing I would remind everyone is that, as you know, we've been in business for 121 years. We've managed for the long term, and we've, you know, although we haven't done this over the last 3 years or so, we have over-delivered in terms of shareholder return. But in order to continue to do that in this environment, as you know, and as we've talked over the last year or so, these changes are necessary in order to position ourselves for long-term growth. And so our confidence is bolstered by the fact that everywhere that we've invested in our portfolio, if you go back to my prepared comments, every brand that we've invested in has grown. Yes, we've had some drag from the oils and baking business. Part of that is because we consciously chose to back off on investment. Where we are focused, there is no question that we're actually seeing results. As it relates to pricing, we still feel confident, and we've demonstrated that we can get pricing through, particularly where we have leading brands. There are a few areas where we're not the leading brand where we do tend to follow, but for the vast majority of our categories, we are able to lead. We use both, in the case of coffee, in the current environment, we've used trade to affect price versus taking a list price decline. So we do use different levers to affect price. And then as I've said in previous quarters, as we go to our customers, and we have justifiable price movements, we can and have been successful getting those through. You know, one of the questions you all have asked us is it more difficult? I would tell you that it is taking a little bit longer. There is more discussion about pricing, particularly increases. But, you know, I would say in almost every case, we've continued to be successful in getting that pricing through.
Maybe if I could just follow up on coffee, I'd just like to ask a little bit more about kind of what happened in the quarter. The team had a lot of confidence here that the lower green coffee was going to benefit profitability. Relative to our estimates, this was the biggest miss on the P&L in the fourth quarter versus what we expected, and I think what you guys expected. So can you talk a little bit about kind of why it happened? Why did you need the more trade promotion, and what's happening within the coffee segment in the industry to drive these prices down?
Good morning, David. This is Joe. I'll start there. I referenced Mark's comments earlier. Our costs to support the launch of 1850 and Dunkin' canister were up in the fourth quarter, along with that increased trade. You know, while we're disappointed with those results and we wish they were better, we did grow both volume and segment profit in the quarter, and we saw continued momentum in strategic areas. So our K-Cup business was up 11%. We're outperforming the one-cup segment in the 4, 12, and 52-week scan data. Sales of Dunkin' Donuts and Cafe Bustelo both grew double digits this year. And our launch of 1850 is off to a fast start. Great retailer acceptance and execution. As Mark said, we have significant investment behind that platform. And our marketing programs, which have started, will continue to ramp up over the next few weeks. And finally, we've been working to better align our cost-price relationship, and we feel it's in a much better position going into fiscal 19. I think you'll recall where we were last year at this time, and we've made tremendous improvements. So I would say, yes, pricing is still competitive, but where we have made those trade investments, we are seeing results, and we're seeing volume move in the right direction.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Ken Goldman with J.P. Morgan. Your line is now open.
Hi, thank you very much, and good morning. Two questions from me. My first question is, I wanted to make sure that my back-of-the-envelope math is right. If you're looking for about $800 million from Ainsworth, it seems to imply that organic sales growth to hit your target of $8.3 billion has to be around 2 to 3%, and that's in a year when you're taking prices down in coffee, and you're reducing your SKUs by 1%. It honestly feels to me a little bit aggressive, and I just wanted to make sure, A, is my math right there, and B, if you could walk us a little bit through, you know, obviously there's some innovation and so forth, but maybe that innovation wouldn't be quite as much to get us there, or quite enough. If you could walk us through a little bit some of those drivers in more detail to get there, that'd be great.
Hey, Ken, it's Mark Belgia. Good morning. Your math is correct. We are expecting about, you know, depending on how you're rounding, about 2% top-line growth, what I'll call an organic, which is ex Ainsworth. Most of that, candidly, is coming from innovation, in particular 1850 and power-ups, along with some pet innovation coming. And then in terms of, I just want to clarify a little bit on the price decline in coffee. You're correct in this fact that we've got one more quarter to lap, that the price increase that we offset with trade beginning at the end of Q1, early Q2 last year. So there is that. But after that, there's really no price decline built in anywhere across the portfolio. So it is primarily innovation. There is some growth, you know, continue obviously in Uncrustables, Bustelo. All our growth brands are still projecting up. Nature's is still expected to grow, even though we had a great year last year. But the key drivers are innovation.
Maybe I didn't understand that. There's only one more quarter of coffee pricing to be down, but your costs have only been down for one quarter. How is that the case that it won't flow through the most of the rest of the year?
No, I guess what we're saying is that we're going to lap that trade adjustment that we had to take. Because remember, we took price up and into, I guess, January of 17, and then had to take it back down. We still have a quarter of exposure on that.
Okay. I'll follow up with you offline on that one.
Okay.
And my other question is, you know, you're moving your pet food offices from some big cities to Orville, and Orville's a great town, but I'm just wondering, you know, I hearken back to Kashi, right, and I think back to what happened with that brand, not to pick on Kellogg, but when, you know, a brand that was run very well sort of independently was taken from a big, you know, from a one that wasn't really a big city, but it was on the West Coast in a very attractive area to you know, something different. And I'm just worried about the potential for losing people the potential for integrating a business that, you know, has had some struggles, so maybe this is the right thing to do. But, you know, how are you factoring in some of those risks into your thinking for this year and your guidance?
I'll start, Ken. This is Mark Smucker. And thanks, actually, for that question. So you are absolutely right. The risks that you highlighted are risks that we have very carefully considered. And I want to say that the team, particularly, you know, San Francisco being the largest of the pet offices, we have a fantastic team. And they're great people. They're passionate about the business. I don't think this is similar to Kashi, because this is our largest business. It is predominantly a mainstream business that resides in more or less similar channels. Yes, there is pet specialty, which are unique channels, but I think, you know, if you think about, you know, it being our largest business and it, the ability for it to fully leverage the capabilities that we've built, co-locating the business with some of those capabilities is really key. As it relates to talent, you know, we are working hard to retain and attract several of our key folks there, and so far we've had some very nice wins. So we are keenly aware of the risks, and we are doing everything that we possibly can to ensure that we mitigate them. I don't know if either.
Yeah, I just add to Ken, this is Dave Lemon. You know, we have strong offers with a number of acceptances to move to date, so that's one positive. The second positive is that we have strong retention programs in place to ensure there's business continuity through the move. And, you know, I would just say that we're really excited about the opportunity of bringing the pet business under one roof and being able to harness the excitement of the entire organization against pet moving forward. So,
okay, thanks very much.
Thanks, Ken.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Alexia Howard with Bernstein. Your line is now open.
Good morning, everyone.
Hi, Alexia.
Morning, Alexia.
Can we start with the pet food business and the recall? Are you concerned about any knock-on implications in terms of traction with the retailers and the shelf space allocations, given all the channel mix shift? And I guess a broader question in there is, given that you've got Amazon entering the category with the WAG brand and entry into food, drug, and mass, stepping on the toes of some of the larger pet companies, are you worried about pricing pressure in the category as a whole?
Hi, Alexia. This is Barry. Let me take the questions there. As far as the recall is concerned, a couple comments on that. First, you know, just to clarify, we had made the decision to exit the Gravy Train wet business because of profitability challenges, and we had made that decision last summer. So that product line did not meet our profitability hurdles. So we had, you know, communicated that to our customers, and that had actually discontinued production. You know, and then the recall occurred. We fully expect to recover all of those costs associated with that recall from our supplier who provided us with the ingredient associated with that, and we expect to recover those costs probably by the middle of this fiscal year. As far as knock-on, you know, our Gravy Train dry business continues to perform incredibly well. If we look at consumption just over the last 13-week period, it's actually up 2%, despite the fact that that value segment is down, I think, about 9 points. So, anyhow, we think that brand has, you know, tremendous equity, and we have not seen the knock-on effect across the portfolio. As far as price, let me just talk to WAG, and I know there's been a lot of attention on Amazon's launch there. We compete with private label in every channel where we do business. So it's another private label. Clearly, Amazon has strength with the consumer base. But our Natural Balance brand, our Nature's Recipe brands are incredibly strong, perform very well through the e-commerce channel. We'll continue to invest in those brands holistically, and we think we'll continue to be able to compete effectively against Amazon's brand or other private label brands that either currently exist or may appear. As far as pricing pressures, Mark alluded earlier, we are seeing cost headwinds on input costs, especially against our across our entire portfolio, and we'll monitor the market, and if and when it's appropriate, we will move price accordingly. So some thoughts there on your question. Thanks for those.
Thank you. I'll pass it on.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Pablo Zuanic with SIG. Your line is now open.
Yes, thank you. I guess one question first for Mark Smucker. Mark, you know, I would say you said you appointed new people in most of your divisions. You gave a positive spin on that. I could turn that and say that you had some senior departures, right? Steve Oakland, Barry Dunaway. Is that a concern? You know, why are people leaving at this junction, some, you know, very strong assets for the company? That's the first question. And the second one, I guess for Mark Belgia, and I know that we've gone back and forth on the guidance. In very simplistic terms, if I take your 796 EPS for fiscal year 18, that's with a 28% tax rate. If I use your 24% tax rate, that's a 44-cent benefit for next year, plus the 25 cents of Ainsworth. That's going to get me to 865, right? And your guidance is 840 to 865. So maybe it's a comment more than a question, but in terms of you given on all the pieces, but at the end of the day, despite 2% organic growth, despite talk about better margins in coffee in the first half, at the end of the day, your guidance is implying that ex Ainsworth and ex the tax rate, EPS is going to be flat to down next year for the core. So if you can comment on that. And the last one, I'm sorry, I know it's only two, but the third one, just very briefly for the pet, for the new chief of the pet division, you know, can you comment in terms of the $800 million in sales for Ainsworth? What does that reflect in terms of underlying sales growth for that business? The scanner data implies it's slowing. You know, what's the room for growth there in FDM? Can you do more in specialty with that brand or e-commerce? If you can give some color in that sense, it would help. And also, you know, whether there's room to in expand the private label business that you have there, you know, pure balance with Walmart, but can that also be expanded? So some color in terms of how Ainsworth can grow from that 800 base would help. Thanks.
Okay, Pablo, it's Mark Smucker. I'll start, and then we'll just go around the table here. Thank you for the question on leadership. Because we were expecting that, and gives us the opportunity to speak to it a little bit more. So first of all, you mentioned Steve and Barry, both of whom are very seasoned leaders, managers with the company. Similarly, I would tell you that Dave on pet, Joe on coffee, and Tina on food are, quite frankly, some of our best leaders in the company. They are very seasoned. They all have 20-plus years with the company. They have worked in various functions and businesses. In some cases, actually, and I think in every case, they've all been mentored by Mr. Oakland, and then to some degree Barry. And so there's a tremendous amount of depth of knowledge, understanding of the consumer, and clear leadership capabilities both in managing people and businesses, and all of them have delivered results and growth in their various roles with the company. Dave in pet is probably the newest, and although he's been on these calls in the past in his current or former role, you all will get an opportunity to get to know him a little bit better. He obviously comes from Canada and has spent a tremendous amount of time managing an extremely complex business in a very concentrated customer environment. And I think that positions him well to manage pet, which one could argue is probably our most complex business as well, and also is a very concentrated customer environment. So those are some of the reasons why I just feel tremendously confident in this team, and I have very, very high hopes for them. So thank you for the question.
Hey, Pablo, this is Mark Belgis, so I'll go after your second question. So what you said is right to a degree. So simply adding the benefit of tax and Ainsworth gets you sort of the, you know, call it the middle part of our guidance range. I think this just underscores, we talk about, if you look at our cost savings programs and you look at our increase in marketing, those basically are a wash. We're saving $80 million plus in initiatives, and we increased our marketing on legacy Smucker by about the same amount. So, and then if you add to it the cost inflation and the Longmont cost, that's the draw down. What I would say is that as we've talked about pricing, we still think that there is pricing opportunity to address some of these costs. So I'd say it's more more negative weighted because we're getting the full 12-month impact of cost, and we still have pricing opportunity to go forward. Candidly, we'll see the volume impact of that, but we expect to cover off of that. So you're right in the simplest math, but I think you really need to break it down to the next level and double-click on the components. And again, to go back to Mark's earlier comments, we just feel that because of the opportunities with tax savings and cost savings that we need to spend appropriately behind the brands, and thus we get to the math that you suggested.
And Pablo, just to touch on some of your questions with respect to Ainsworth, this is Dave Lemon, by the way. I'd say the brand is doing extremely well. We've seen it growing at 27%, both on the 13 and 52-week basis. And as we look to the future on that business, we see huge upside on snacks and cat through innovation targeted behind those businesses and those segments. And then really the juggernaut of the business is on dog food, and there's continued growth through white space on distribution and through innovation planned against the brand. So we feel very confident that the brand will continue to grow at the pace it's currently growing.
Pablo.
And is there room to grow a private label business?
What was that? Sorry?
No, within Ainsworth, is there room to grow the private label business, or are you going to exit that? Because it's a big part of the total sales number anyway, right?
No.
Private label piece.
We're still committed to the private label business that we're packing, and from a growth perspective, we expect it to grow at category levels.
But Pablo, this is Mark Belgis. Just maybe one more point on Ainsworth, because we've been kind of honed in on the near term. But, you know, one of the things to your point is while we're comfortable with the private label business, and as Dave suggested, we'll grow it as the category grows, our expectation is Nutrish is the brand that will grow. And so over time, you know, that proportion will be very positive across its P&L as we see improvement across the segment profit, gross profit, et cetera. So maintaining the private label and growing the Nutrish is really the driver strategically.
Pablo, this is Mark Smucker. This is Mark Smucker again. Just one final point on Ainsworth. You know, one of the reasons that we're so excited about it is that the growth potential, the growth that that team has achieved, and, you know, we believe that there is room to grow. I mean, there's plenty of opportunity on that brand, and we think that there's definitely upside. I will also say that that team, which is primarily located in Pittsburgh, is a fantastic team also. They are incredibly passionate, and their leader, Jeff Waters, who is a seasoned pet expert or pet, he's got a tremendous amount of years of experience in pet, has agreed to stay on and continue to drive that growth. So we're very pleased that we still have a great team there as well, and very confident in that group of people.
Thank you. That's all very helpful. Marbel, you're going to ask me a quick follow-up. The dilution from the baking business, I estimate at 25 to 30 cents. Does that sound right to you?
Maximize, yeah, that's probably right. And I guess just while the question's been addressed, I think one of the things we have to take into consideration is that you know, we are already thinking about, in the event that business is divested, of how we would try to shore up at least some of the dilution in the current year. We obviously will have proceeds that we might be able to do things with. We're looking at cost savings opportunities to help offset some of the absolute dilution. So, but gross, you're in the ballpark.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Scott Mushkin with Wolfe Research. Your line is now open.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my question. So I wanted to talk about the long-term model here a little bit, and I know we talked about pricing in the short run, but you know, I was just down in Bentonville and you know, spending some time with the folks at Target, and you know, they talk openly about you know, the investments they're making in their business and the cost of doing business that they're seeing going up, and they also talk openly about their CPG partners having much you know, higher margins just generally. So I guess I'm just kind of looking at my model over like a 10-year period and saying, you know, can we sustain EBIT margins with the, you know, your partners under so much pressure? And I guess I just wanted to get your comments on that.
Scott, this is Mark Belge. I'll start, and then obviously anyone wants to jump in. So it's a very fair question. I think it's a near-term question, and it's clearly a longer-term strategic question. And a couple thoughts. I think that, you know, we have talk to you folks for years about the importance of number one brands, and that continues. And we have a great portfolio of that that we do believe will allow us to price. I think as we move forward, we need to make sure that we're making the proper investments to generate the returns and keep those products and categories that are desirable to the retailer. We don't want to be a marginalized category, so I think that's a focus. But candidly, I think we have to continue as an industry to look at opportunity to manage cost in other places than just COGS. And, you know, we want to hold on to that operating profit that we've become accustomed to as an industry. And so I think while it started by some of our peers maybe as short-term ways to drive shareholder value, I think longer-term that is the strategic approach. And so we're going to be very thoughtful as we, you know, as we add costs going forwards. And we're going to continue to work with our suppliers to make sure that we are, you know, we're in a good place from a cost perspective on incoming, you know, raw materials and services. So it's fair. I think it is a reasonable challenge as an industry we're facing. But again, I think we fall back on the two things. One is we have incredibly good relationships with our retail partners, and we also have great brands to offer up to them.
Scott, this is Mark Smucker. I would just add that we have seen this type of pressure in the past. You know, we've been in the business a long time, and there are moments in our history and in the industry's history where our retail partners push harder than others, and that this happens to be one of those times. As Mark said, we have incredibly strong relationships with our customers, which have helped us clearly. But then I would just go back to the very first question that Andrew asked, is that we have an obligation to strengthen the bond between our brands and our consumers. And in the, you know, in the classic sense of a push versus a pull strategy, to the extent that we are successful in strengthening the bond, the emotional bond between consumers and our brands, and consumers are demanding our brands, whether they be large or small brands, that also allows us to continue to grow our business. So it's not just about selling in our brands with our customers. It is about engaging with our consumers actively and investing in that, in those efforts.
So two follow-ups. Number one, to what you just said, again, it suggests maybe a little downward pressure on margins long term to, in the new environment with, you know, e-commerce and other things going on, to really engage with that customer. So that's follow-up number one. And then my follow-up number two actually is just about cannibalization on the Dunkin' Donuts brand with 1850. Have you guys planned for that? What's the early seeing? And then I'll yield. Thank you very much for taking my questions.
Hey, Scott, this is Mark Belges. So I think your first question was basically around, kind of a little bit honed in on e-commerce and just margin pressures that will push, and then just some of the near term. So, you know, it's funny, we've had conversations several times over the last couple of years as we've looked at e-commerce and the growth of it and the expectation of it. And for those who have been around the industry a while, it's a little bit takes us back in time to, as the business got out of traditional grocery retail and club and mass came stronger and had similar issues in terms of margin pressures because it wasn't just not an established channel and so forth. We recognize right now that growth in that area is going to put some margin pressure, but we're working actively across the company in ways to identify how best to improve that margin as more of the business shifts to the internet and e-commerce. So we think that's an addressable situation moving forward because we understand that, you know, we have to do that. And then just broader, I think we pretty much covered, you know, there might be some margin pressures as we work through this time period that Mark suggested from the retailer standpoint. But again, not to continue to repeat ourselves, but just the relationship and the brands we offer, we think that'll get us through that as well.
Yeah. Okay, Scott, sorry. This is Joe. I'll take your 1850 question. Yeah, you know, we're excited about 1850. It is a very different positioning than the Dunkin' brand. It will slot into that entry-level premium segment, and the work we've done prior to launch shows that it is highly incremental. The positioning, the way we talk to the consumer, the product, very different, and I think when you start to see some of our consumer communication, you'll see the differences there. So we're not concerned on cannibalization there with the Dunkin' Donuts brand.
All right, thanks, guys.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Farha Aslam with Stephens. Your line is now open.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning, Farha.
Question on pet food. You now have three kind of premium dog food brands. You have Nature's Recipe, Nutrish, and Natural Balance. Could you share with us kind of the positioning of each and what growth you expect next year from each of those?
All right, this is Barry. Let me start there, and Dave, feel free to jump in. As far as Natural Balance is concerned, that is our super premium line of pet food, and we have made the commitment to this point to sell that exclusively through the pet specialty channel. We think that's where the nutritionist is shopping, and that's where, you know, we'll continue to be consumer-led as we think about that brand. As relative to Nature's Recipe and Nutrish, first, just based on the successful launch of Nature's, I continue to believe there's a place for that in the mass channel, the grocery and mass channel. Again, based on the launch success, it was up 20% in this latest quarter. We have double-digit growth planned for this next year. Where we've seen that brand perform particularly well is in the grain-free segment of the premium. And so our innovation and marketing efforts over the next year will be focused in that grain-free area as we think about differentiating it. You know, we were the first mover in bringing that brand over from Pet Specialty, and it has that halo of you know, wholesome, natural ingredients as a Pet Specialty brand. The Nutrish brand also competes in that premium segment, but it's a different consumer, and you know, just the accessible nature of the brand and the culinary focus with the Rachel Ray equity. So as the team brings those portfolios together, I know a lot of work's going to go in to make sure that we continue to differentiate those brands, but we believe they can continue to be highly complementary in each of those channels respectively. Dave, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, I just say, you know, Nature's Recipe, there's a lot of growth through the innovation in the LID segment, the limited ingredient diet, or natural balance, excuse me, in the limited ingredient diet segment. Nature's Recipe, we're really pushing out on the innovation in grain-free in pet food and pet snacks, and then on the Nutrish side, you know, they have over 10 concepts that they're bringing to market this year in dog, cat, and snacks, and that will really provide fuel for growth. So we feel very confident about that.
So double-digit growth for Nutrish as well?
Yes.
And then just a broader question on pricing. Mark, you highlighted that you are successfully taking pricing. Are competitors following, and what private label pressure are you seeing? So how much of that pricing are you able to retain? Because in coffee, you had to spend back this quarter with higher trade spend.
Farah, we haven't taken a lot of price. Actually, I might turn it to Tina, but we haven't taken a lot of price up in the last, well, year-ish, because commodities have been lower. We would expect competitors to follow. But I think that's a question probably for the future, and I think Tina might have a couple comments.
Yeah, good morning, Farah. It's Tina. From a foods perspective, we took price on peanut butter about a year ago. We'll be lapping that in June. And we took our Uncrustable price up in May of last year as well. And again, it did take competition some time to follow, but they did follow. And if you take a look at even the most recent IRI data, you can see that the business is strong and we are up versus prior years. So the execution of pricing has been successful within those food brands.
I think the other thing, Farah, this is Mark Belger, that to keep in mind, and we didn't go through the litany necessarily of all of the areas of costs are going up, but these are costs that are going up in several categories. So whether you're a branded manufacturer or a private label manufacturer, you're going to be incurring costs. We're in the world of inflation, and inflation means rising prices over time. Now, the timing of that may alter a little bit, but that's a little bit bodes to why we feel this way. Just to clarify my earlier comment, what I said is, you know, we've reflected all the inflation in our plan, and so we will look for opportunities for pricing that hope will, you know, help mitigate those and actually be net positive. But we've assumed, you know, basically all the inflation across the 12-month window.
Mark, and this is very fair. One thing I would add is we did just take pricing on selective snacks, again, where we lead in the category and where we felt it was appropriate, again, based on certain thresholds. So that pricing has been taken to our retailers and will be effective at the end of July.
That's helpful. And so net, that 2-3% on core growth, how much of that is pricing for next year?
None, or very little, just other than what Barry mentioned in pet snacks.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Akshay Jagdal with Jefferies. Your line is now open.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking the questions. I wanted to ask about pet. So just to clarify, you know, the Nutrish brand obviously is growing well into the 20s. Can you remind us what the mix is? Because I believe private label is around 17-18%, but I'm wondering how much of the growth is going to be driven by Nutrish and how much Nutrish is as a portion of the $800 million? That's the first question. And then more importantly, what are your expectations and sort of how much visibility do you have on the innovation pipeline as part of the M&A process? And then competition, right? There's obviously some other competing brands that are entering channels. You've entered a new channel as well with Nutrish has entered a new channel. So there's some concerns, I think, about competition and also about channel fill. So if you could address those in the context of your top-line growth guidance for that segment, for that business, that would be really helpful.
Akshay, this is Barry, and I think Dave and I can tag team this. As far as the growth, the numbers that Dave quoted earlier, the 27%, that is all the Rachael Ray Nutrish brand. So that by far the majority of the business is the branded side of the business, and that, you know, double-digit growth will all be driven through that brand. A lot of that growth is resulting from expanded distribution in the pet specialty channel, seeing significant growth in the e-commerce channel as well, and continued growth in you know, food, drug, and mass. So just to the earlier point, private label will continue to grow more in line with the category, but that significant growth will really come from the Rachael Ray Nutrish brand. As far as innovation is concerned, we did have a view into that pipeline, somewhat limited through the diligence process, but obviously now that it's part of our company, much greater visibility and a high degree of confidence in the success that will come from that innovation pipeline.
Yeah, basically, I don't have much to add. This is Dave Lemon, by the way. Innovation is clear in the pipeline across both businesses, obviously. We feel it's as though there's room for growth across all portfolios of our business. And we have the most robust pipeline since we've owned the business. So we feel very confident moving forward that there won't be anything taken off of the list. There will be only things added to the list.
And then maybe just from a competitive standpoint, Akshay, even with the incremental competition, the Nutrish brand has continued to grow its share in the last four consecutive periods. They have a record share now at about 8.5% of dry dog, and then significant growth across premium cat, dry cat, wet cat, snacks, and so forth. So that brand has tremendous strength, and yes, there's more competition, but velocities continue to be strong, and market share continues to grow.
Right. So just to summarize maybe, so it, roughly two-thirds of the business seems to be Nutrish, and if all of the growth is coming from there, you know, you're talking like low 20% growth. If I'm understanding what you said correctly, most of that growth is just from distribution, right? And the innovation would be on top of that, correct? Like, I mean, I'm guessing you hadn't planned for innovation gains in your $800 million number. So am I understanding that correctly? And then I just have a follow-up on margins for that business.
We're good. Barry, why don't you add? No, we're going to have to keep moving on, Akshay. I'm sorry, we have others on the call.
Yeah, most of the growth this year, for this fiscal year, was based on the incremental distribution gains that the business had secured across all channels. So that's where the majority of that growth is coming from. For instance, there's significant gains in premium cat distribution that isn't in place that will be effective and go on shelf in August. So the majority, and as we said, also incremental distribution in pet specialty. The innovation will be in more so in future years, actually, and that was built into more of the deal model growth. But this year is primarily based on just continued velocities as well as incremental distribution.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Jason English with Goldman Sachs. Your line is now open.
Hey, good morning, folks. Thank you for allowing me to ask the question.
Good morning, Jason.
Good morning. I know we're running a little bit late. I'll try to keep this rapid and on point. I'm walking your guidance back from EPS up to sales, and I'm getting to a gross margin number of a little bit shy of 35% at the midpoint. Is that roughly correct?
Oh, that sounds low.
Yeah, that's pretty significantly low, Jason. I think we'd be more aligned where F-18 came in.
Okay.
Maybe it's the way you're handling the cost savings. I don't know, but yeah, it's our gross margins will be much more in line with the 38%-ish that we achieved in 18.
Cool. That's a less alarming number, and I'll follow up with you guys afterwards to kind of figure out where my walk is a little bit off.
Okay.
And we were expecting next year you to have to absorb maybe 100 plus basis points of negative margin mix from Ainsworth at gross margin. Clearly, we don't have P&L visibility. Is that roughly the magnitude of mix headwind that you're facing next year?
That's probably ballparkish close, yeah. I have a feeling that it's the way the synergies and the cost savings are playing out on the base business that might be what's skewing you a bit.
Probably, and I'll follow up with you guys after that. And one last question on pet. How much EBIT do you expect Ainsworth to add to pet next year? And what is your assumption of underlying profit growth ex Ainsworth and pet?
So I guess just in the spirit of what we've disclosed, so if you go with the commentary off of our interest and back, most of the interest increases due to Ainsworth, and then you're going to get, call it 90 to 100 million-ish of EBIT on business.
Okay. I'll leave it there and pass it on. I know we're running long. Thanks, guys.
Okay, thanks, Jake.
Thank you. Our next question comes from John Baumgartner with Wells Fargo. Your line is now open.
Good morning. Thanks for the question. I wanted to come back to Rachel Ray for a moment. Looking at the dog food category, obviously, seeing quite a bit of momentum accelerating from premium, mix-accretive innovation. And when I look at Rachel Ray, it's also gone down that path with the Just Six, the Dish, the zero grain, but it feels like the traction on that front has been pretty limited. So I guess when you're going through the diligence for this deal, I mean, how are you thinking about the ability to segment up in dog food, you know, outside of the opportunities in pet and cat?
Yeah, we just think there's there is tremendous brand equity there, and as the team, the Ainsworth team has thought about further segmentation in premium, we continue to believe there are opportunities for additional segmentation there. The velocities will probably be somewhat slower. But we, again, back to Dave's point, where we built tremendous growth in and where we see exceptional growth is in the premium cat and also in snacks. So dog is going to continue to grow, but we've moderated that growth based on just how fast the brand has grown, incremental competition within dry dog. So where we have really focused and where we believe the growth for that brand is going to come from is in premium cat and snacks.
Okay. And then just to follow up just briefly, when you include the Ainsworth assets into the base pet business, how are you thinking about the long-term revenue growth target there? I mean, any upside to that number going forward?
This is Mark. We'll probably update our growth rates for all our businesses as part of our investor day. All things being equal, based on the conversation we've had with what Ainsworth's expectations are in the near term, it will drive a higher number than, what we've said about the base business. But just in terms of the absolute guidance, I think we're going to hold off on that for a few months. Let us get a few months of Ainsworth under our belt.
Great. Thanks, Mark. Thanks for putting me in.
Yep.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Rob Dickerson with Deutsche Bank. Your line is now open.
Great, thank you. Very short, quick question, just on free cash flow. I know you said I think this year it's what $850. You ended 18 around $900. Given tax benefits, there's obviously some net income growth flowing through. So, and I know CapEx is up a bit. But I'm just wondering kind of what else is the offset such that free cash flow would be down year over year. That's all. Thanks.
Yep. So to answer that, you're right. There is some incremental tax benefits. It's a plus to that number. The back off number would be CapEx is up about $40 million if you take the middle of the range. And then the other big component would be the increase in what we'll call one-time costs. Those are split between merger integration and then some of the costs from what we call our organizational op program, which is there will be costs associated with some of the office closings and so forth that we talked about. And then there's a little bit of just a conservative assumption around working capital use, but most of it is CapEx and the one-time cost.
So you would really view it as a just more of a there's the CapEx piece, but that's somewhat one-time, and then the other roll-off is a little one-time as well, such that 20 hopefully should be growing again.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. We've spoken to that a couple of times. Once we get over the Longmont investment of the last couple of years, we should see a little bit more of a return to our 3 to 3.5% of sales number.
Okay, super. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Pamela Kaufman with Morgan Stanley. Your line is now open.
Hi, good morning. I just wanted to get a sense for your outlook on the competitive landscape in coffee for next year. Do you expect any changes in the environment given the Nestle-Starbucks JV and continued evidence of private label competition in the category?
Hey, good morning, Pamela. This is Joe. I'll take that. Yeah, obviously there's a lot of activity in the coffee space. The Nestle-Starbucks deal, two well-respected organizations, private label growth. We are always, what I would say, competitively vigilant. And we'll continue to monitor that, but we are very focused on what we have to do to execute our strategy and drive growth. And really, whether it's private label or competitive, branded competitive, we know we've got to do three things: invest in innovation, continue to engage with our consumers, and ensure we're executing the right price and trade strategy. And, if we can do those things, we feel like we'll be in a good place.
Okay, thank you. And also I just wanted to follow up on Jif and what drove the weakness in the quarter, just given that the retail takeaway data seems like it was still positive more recently.
Yeah, so hi, Pamela, it's Tina. Thanks for the question. It's very interesting. We came off of a really strong third quarter, if you look back on Jif, And really, we were posting high comps versus the prior year. But if you look at the full year for Jif, it's really strong. We ended up flat to slightly up from a net sales perspective. And as you mentioned, our comps look really good. So we're really confident and look forward to a good first quarter.
I think some of it was just timing.
Yeah. I would add the launch in Canada has helped our Jif business tremendously. The fourth quarter, we picked up a significant piece of distribution, which really pushed the brand, and we have overachieved our share targets in year one. So really strong support from Canada as well.
Thanks. That's helpful.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Robert Moskow with Credit Suisse. Your line is now open.
Hi, thanks. One of your prepared remarks, Mark, I think was that the first quarter's off to a strong start. I looked at the Nielsen data for May, and it indicated down 2% for Smucker overall. It looked like a deceleration. I was wondering if your data is showing something different. And then the second part is gross margin. I think what you're implying is gross margin expansion for your core business. What's driving that? I mean, it sounded like you've got more competitive pressure in coffee. What gives you comfort that gross margin can go higher on the core business in 2019?
So, Rob, this is Mark Smucker. So I know you guys are looking at Nielsen data, and we get IRI for our categories as well. And then just reconciling back to shipments and consumption, you know, we are seeing, it's early in the quarter. We're not quite halfway through the first quarter, but we've seen some pretty positive trends. I would of note, coffee. So we're seeing some of that turnaround. And just looking at some of the, obviously, the new products as well, we were off to a good start there. But even in base coffee, we're seeing some a little bit of pickup as well. So I think that's why, you know, hopefully you'll see some of that translate into the consumption numbers in the next 4 weeks or so. I don't know if you guys have anything to add. You good?
Hey, Rob, this is Mark Belger. I guess the way I'd answer your gross margin or gross profit question is that, yeah, I mean, it's coming from the base. I mean, we are getting gross margin expansion out of just the innovation. I mean, although it's at a loss at a segment profit because of the marketing spend, there's obviously gross profit dollars being generated. And then, I think in my scripted comments we talked about we have still incremental cost savings or cost benefits coming through with lower green and also with the first half of the year getting the KGM savings that we started in October of a year ago. So that there's probably a little bit of mix in there as well. So and then just cost-saving programs, certainly some of those are affecting the COGS line.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. And our final question comes from Brian Holland with Consumer Edge Research. Your line is now open.
Yeah, thanks for letting me in there. Just quickly on coffee, thinking about the competitive landscape here, I guess first on the innovation side, if there's any way you can give us a sense of what would define success for the rollout of 1850. I mean, if I do the math, one share of bagged, one share of pods would sort of equal out or net out to about 50 million. So I'm just trying to understand what would define success year one to on the innovation front for 1850. And then secondly, you've got on the bag side, or just across all of coffee, you have Nestle partnering with Starbucks on that licensing deal for CPG. Keurig talked about at their investor day sort of stepping up their efforts on the bag business. So just wondering how you think about your efforts to drive 1850 and bolster your portfolio against a more competitive or what would figure to be a more competitive backdrop over the next 12 months. Thanks.
Ryan, it's Mark Belger. I'm going to start. I'm going to throw it to Joe. So just in terms, we're not going to give specific dollar expectations on 1850 right now, but I will say it's the larger of the two components, and obviously I said that most of the 2% or a good portion of the 2% top-line growth, so just to do the math for you, it's $150 million in total, and those two innovations are, they're a good portion of that. So that's where that number is coming from. from. The one interesting comment is that in today's world in CPG, a $50 million to $75 million launch is an incredibly successful first year in sales. It's a top 10 item, and we think that this has the potential certainly of being there.
Yeah. No, thanks, Mark. Yeah, Brian, just to follow up, yeah, I would say first and foremost, you know, a measure of success would be just, you know, distribution and acceptance, and I think we're well on our way. Our goal of full distribution, we should be there by August. So from a standpoint of success in retailer acceptance and out in the marketplace, we feel like we're well on our way there. From a bags perspective, again, like you said, you know, very competitive space. Obviously, we have a very strong partnership with Dunkin' Donuts. We continue to see opportunity there. The launch of 1850, as I said earlier, a very different positioning, a very different consumer. Dunkin' leveraging on that shop equity. We feel like there's opportunity with both of those great brands in the premium bag space, and we'll continue to support both of those as we go through the year.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks, Brian.
I'll now turn the call back over to management to conclude.
Okay, thank you all. I know it was a long call. I really appreciate you guys hanging in there. Obviously, a very important call given the quarter and what we're doing, but I really do hope that you all came away with the same level of confidence that we have in the actions we're taking to realign our portfolio, focusing on the growth segments, and again, just encouraged by our efforts paying off wherever we focus. So still work to do. We acknowledge that. But again, I think as always, we want to thank our employees. They're awesome. And they are really what allows us to succeed, and they will continue to help us drive success going forward. So thank you for all your support, and have a good weekend.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes our conference call for today. Thank you for participating, and have a nice day. All parties may now disconnect.